We're on Parshas Vayechi.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to speak about some of the brachos that Yaakov gives to his children. It's a very, very interesting thing. First of all, Yaakov's blessing to his children is very cryptic. There, according to Chazal, Yaakov had nevuah, he had prophecy about what was going to happen at the end of days. In fact, he says it, not just Chazal, but hidden in the message of his message, his charge to his children, is a message about what's going to really happen, you know, in the nevuah. The only problem is we just don't know how to read it and find out what was, you know, how to unravel the mystery. At the same time, you know, this is something that really that challenges every parent. So what do you do? You know, you have to imagine that at some point Yaakov figured out what happened to Yosef. Right? He knows what happened to Yosef. No?
He didn't act like he knew what happened.
At the end.
Well,
when he gets to Egypt, Yosef, you're alive. How did you get here? I stumbled here? I mean, you know. Sooner or later, he's going to figure it out.
Yeah, but he mourned for him so long, evidently. At that time, he didn't know.
No, during that time, he didn't know.
He didn't know.
So now, what do you do as a parent knowing that a group of your sons sold another one of your children into slavery?
And lied to you about it for 20
years.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Right.
But why wouldn't Yosef also get something new to his father about himself?
Oh, we talked about that like 2 years ago. It's a good question. Maybe we'll talk about it again next year. Well, why didn't Yosef send a message to his father? You want to hear that one?
Yeah. I guess because I said
it a lot. Oh, no way. I don't buy that. If your father... Why did Yosef send a message to his father? So some say, well, because the Ramban, I think, says to fulfill the nevuah, the prophecy that he had to see them come down on their own. All right. You asked about you guys. If you have by you guys, turn to 250.
All your fault.
But we're going to go back to Vayechi, I promise.
Okay.
Everybody understand the question? Why doesn't Yosef ever call home? He's the second in command in Egypt. All right, when he's a slave, maybe I could understand. You know, I'm sending a letter when he's in prison, for sure. As soon as he becomes a viceroy, send a messenger, phone call, an email. Right, you know, Yaakov didn't have email, right?
A chariot.
Yaakov didn't have email.
He still didn't know if his father's alive or gone.
So one of two choices. Either, well, Yosef clearly doesn't voluntarily contact his father. But the question we have to ask ourselves is, what does Yosef think is going on? What does he think happened? We've definitely talked about this a number of times. Okay? Now, let's just remember the details of the story. I'm sure I'll do this again next year as well. The last time Yosef saw his father, okay, what happened?
Told him to go and see his brothers.
Good. Where were the brothers?
In the
Shechem, right?
Yeah.
So Yaakov sends Yosef to find out about the brothers. Hey, Yosef, I need you to do me a favor. Go find out about your brothers. Mm-hmm. Immediately upon arriving at his brothers, what happens?
They take him.
They take off his coat. They throw him in a pit. Okay? What are you doing? Nothing. Throw him in a pit. They take him. They pull him out of a pit. They sell him down to Egypt. Okay? Who sent him?
His father.
His father sent him. In fact, immediately before that, what happened? It's Parshas Vayeshev. Okay. I'll even go back before 250.
And you're telling what he dreamed?
He's telling about his dream.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's telling about the dream. Good. 200. Sorry, page 200. Okay. He told the brothers about the dream. The first dream was about the stalks. It was Yaakov, it was Yosef and the brothers. The second dream is different. Pasuk Tesh, page 200, Pasuk Tet. Vayachalom od chalom acher, and he dreamed another dream. Vayishapiro to le'echav, and he told it to his brothers. Vayomer, and he said, Hinei chalamti chalom od, I have heard another dream. Vihinei hashemesh v'hayareach, V'achadashar kochavim mishtachavim li. It's not the 11 stars. The sun and the moon and the 11 stars and 11 stars are bowing down to me. Who is the stars?
Brothers.
Stars are the brothers. Who is the sun and the moon?
Father and mother.
Father and mother. Good. Next. Vayisaper el aviv ve'elechas. So he tells his father, hey dad, I just had a dream you're going to bow down to me. And told his brothers, right? Vayizarbo aviv. His father scolded him.
Yes.
Vayomer lo maha chalom hazeh asher chalamta. What kind of dream is that? Who do you think you are? I and your mother and your brothers are going to bow down to you. Now, one could read this in a number of different ways. The most mild reading would be the following. Yosef, your dream is only foolishness. Why? Your mother is dead. How could it be that your mother would bow down to you if she's already dead? What is the most egregious reading of the text? Who do you think you are? That I'm going to bow down to you? You want to mess around with your brothers, that's one thing. But to have a dream like that? What are you thinking about all day when you shepherd in the field? So now, the very last thing that Yosef's father said to him were words of rebuke. Possibly mild, possibly harsh. Next pasuk. Vayikanu bo echav. His brothers were jealous, and his father kept the matter in mind. What does that mean, kept the matter in mind?
It was on his mind.
Does Yosef know this?
No.
Yosef doesn't know his father's mindset. All he knows is that his father rebuked him. Next. The brothers went to shepherd in Shechem. Last year we did a whole theme on Shechem. Anybody remember it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a. I have to write that one up. I like that one. Then Pasuk Yud Beis in chapter 37, Amud Zayin. Let me go and send you there.
And what was the last thing that they studied together?
Egla Rufa.
Which is about...
Well, that's a Rashi, Midrash.
Oh, it is?
Yeah,
I just thought...
No, that's a Midrash. That's the thing between Midrash and Shah. Let's say with Shah. Let me send you to your brothers. Do you remember, by the way, at the Akedah, when Yitzchak and Abraham are walking together, Vayomer Elav Avi, hey Dad. Vayomer Hineni Bani. Here I am, my son. Ayeh Hased Ola. Where is the ram? Elohim Yirlo Hased Bani. It's this vague political non-answer. Kadosh Baruch Hu will send this there. God commands us that. So what does he say? He says, your brothers are shepherding in Shechem. Lecha ve'eshlachacha aleihem. Right, I'm going to send you to them. Then he says, Lechma re'eh shom achecha ve'shom aton v'hashiveni davar. Bring me back word. Right, what does Abraham Avinu say to the Na'arim? Ani ve'anar necha afa v'nashuvah aleihem. We'll be back. What does Abraham mean when he says, we'll be back? I'll be back. Bring back word. So, meaning, what does Yaakov mean when he says this? Yaakov means, come back. Go find out what the story with the brothers are and let me know. What's the title on your brothers? Yosef is sitting on a caravan on the way to Egypt. And he's wondering, how could my brothers do this? How could they do such a thing? To send... Don't they know that I'm my father's most beloved son? And then he starts thinking to himself, but what's the last interaction I had with my father? I told him he was going to bow down to me. I told him I was going to be in charge of the family and not him. What's the last thing my father said to me? Go to Shechem. You're going to see your brothers there. They're waiting for you. Oh, they were waiting for me, all right.
He didn't
What?
He didn't say that.
He said, "Yashlachacha aleihem." I'm sending you to them. Okay, he sent me to them, all right. What were they doing in Shechem anyway? How come they were so far away? Why did he send? Why did he send me all that way? Yeah, that's a whole different part of here. Pastor. Yeah, yeah, I have a whole thing on stem. Yeah. Did he really?
Yes, I don't remember what it was.
Similar vein?
Something like that.
Interesting. And he's traveling, and he's driving down, and he's driving, and he's driving, you know, and you start to wonder. And then, you know, nobody comes looking for him. Right, no remorse, no regret. The brothers know where Yosef is. So what, they're going to sell him down, and what's Yaakov going to do? He's going to find out.
Okay.
He's going to come looking for him. He's going to send messengers. He's going to do whatever. How many Hebrews are there showing up in Egypt asking about the son?
None. But they made a story to tell their father.
How does he know? What does he know?
He said he was killed.
What does Yosef know?
He doesn't
matter. Yosef doesn't know anything.
But they told their father a story.
Oh, I know that, and you know that. But he doesn't know that. And Mrs. Harris asked me, why doesn't Yosef call home? Why doesn't he send a message? Fine. Let's go on. Interesting question. Excuse me. Now, Yosef gets married, Mikates. Right? He becomes a very important person in the land of Egypt.
That's true. I don't think they refer to him ever as Yosef. He's always the viceroy.
Well, here we are. Turn to page 230, please. Chapter Mem Aleph, 41, Pasuk. Nun. Mem Aleph, Pasuk Nun, page 230. Do you have a different Chumash?
No, not Pasuk Mem Aleph.
Chapter, Parak Mem Aleph.
Okay,
all right. 230. Uli Yosef Yulad Shnei Banim, B'terem Tavoshna Hara'av. Before the famine began, Yosef had two children. Asher Yodalo Asnat Bat Potifera, Kohen On. So Asnat, his wife, bore for him. Vayikra Yosef et Shem HaBechor Menashe. He called him Menashe. Why? Ki Nashani Elohim et Kol Amali et Kol Beit Avi. Translation. God has made me forget all my hardship in all of my father's household. What did he name his son, his first son?
Menashe.
Goodbye to the past. Starting a new life. What do you mean? Right now, what should he be naming his son? Hello, mother, hello, father. He should name him Efo Avi. Where's my family? He should be naming him Telephone. Instead, what's he naming him?
Menashe.
He's naming him Menashe. Nashani, I've forgotten the past. I've started anew. This is the new family that I'm going to build.
Mm-hmm.
What does that say to you? At Kol Amali, God has answered my pain.
You think
they were? Yeah. Good. The Ephraim Kifrani Ani Elohim Beretz Ani. Second child, because God has made me Ephraim Kifrani. He has made me fruitful in the land of my
suffering.
But the first child. What does that tell you? When people name their children, they name them
after
parents. Well, after experiences that they've had.
Something.
And so here, what is he naming his child? He's naming his child, I need to move on. So now imagine in Yosef, you can imagine, I mean, you know people like that, that had a very painful experience in their life, and in a way, they closed the door. And they've moved on. And he clearly has moved on. And he doesn't want to open that door anymore. He has a new job, a new life, he has a new purpose. He's really made it, and he's going to make the best of the situation now.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, lo and behold, what happens? His brothers show up, and all of those old and painful memories return. So I don't want to get into why he does what he does. Let's skip to 250 to Vayigash. So he makes it so that I imagine that he did what he did in order to have Binyamin on his side, and all the other brothers would be gone also. That if it wasn't going to be Yosef, it was going to be Yosef and Binyamin. One gets that sense. I get that sense. Aside from that, okay? Vayigash elav Yehuda vayomer. Bi Adoni. Please, my master. Let me please speak in your ears. Do not be too angry, because you are like Paro, you are as strong as Paro. You asked, do we have a father or a brother? Banomer el Adoni, and we said, Yeshlenu avzaken, v'yelez yuzikunim katan. We have an elder father, and he has a young son, v'achid meit, and his brother is dead. V'yivaterhu levado v'imo v'aviv ahivo. And he alone was remained, and his father loved him. Now, is that true?
No.
What is not true?
That his brother is dead.
What? Is it true that that's what they said?
That's what
they said.
Yeah.
Hold on a second. I just want to check that for one second. Here, hold your place and look at page 234. Yosef is interviewing his brothers. They don't know who he is.
In the first time, yeah.
Vayomer, you're dead. Oh, so let's look at you. Vayomer, love. Lo Adoni, no. Ravadecha Baalis Va'ochel, we just came for food. Kulanu b'nei ish echad nachnu. We're all 10 sons of one man. Kainim anachnu, we're from Canaan. Kainim, we're straightforward. Lo yavadecha maragnim, we're not trying to spy. Vayomer Aliyam, he says to them, lo. You came to see the nakedness of the land. You're spying us out, trying to overcome us. Did Gimel? Vayomu, they said, Shneim asar avadecha achim anachnu b'nei ish echad eretz Canaan. We were 12 sons in the land of Canaan. V'inei hakaton et avinu hayom. The youngest is with our father. V'ha'echad einenu. And the last one, what does Einenu mean? Is gone. So what does Yosef say to himself? What does he say in his own head? He's not gone. You sold him. But what don't they say? Interesting enough. What don't they say? What? They don't say he's dead.
So here he
goes. Oh. Here he does. I'm trying to point that out to you. All of a sudden, Yehuda comes and says, I told you, we're one of 12 children, one of 12 sons, and the youngest one you have now, Binyamin, you met. And he says, all of a sudden, he throws in something else. He says, V'achiv meis, his brother is dead. And all of a sudden, Yosef thinking to himself, what do you mean dead? You didn't tell me dead, you told me lost, you told me gone. Why are you changing the story all of a sudden? Why, by the way, does Yehuda say Einenu? Why does Yehuda say Einenu?
Because they don't know.
Correct, because he doesn't want to get stuck on that. He's dead, he's not dead. What happened to him? How did he die? Right, that's the last thing you want. He's Einenu. He's not there.
Why does he say
differently? Now he's confronting. He's really begging, actually. He's trying to say the plight in the most favorable way possible. My father already lost one of his children, mm-hmm. and now he's going to lose the other one of his children, and it's going to be dead to him, and it's going to, you know, he's going to be a living hell for him, because he's begging. What else does he say? Let's skip a little bit. Skip the Chavad. Vanomer. And we said, Lo nuchala redet im yesh achinu hakaton itanu diyaradnu. We can't go. Why? If we take Binyamin with us, then we can go. Ki lo nuchala yod pnei ha'ish v'achinu hakaton itanu itanu. Because we may not go and see this man's face, this viceroy, without our brother with us. Chav Zayim, on 250. Vayomer abdecha v'yeleinu, your servant, our father, said, Atem yidatem kishnayim yaldali ishti. He's telling the story in a way that's going to sound sympathetic. He's begging for Binyamin's life. What's he doing? Not only is he begging for Binyamin's life, he's going to give his life instead of Binyamin. So he's trying to show it in the most sympathetic way possible. He says, my father said, you know, I had, my beloved wife had two children, two sons. Vayetzer ha'echad mi'iti. I lost one. Va'omar ach tarof tarak. And I said, he must have been killed. He has been torn to pieces. V'lo ri'iti v'adhena. Ulekachtem gam etzem ne'im panai b'karahu asan. You're going to take this one from me and something's going to happen to him? V'ho raditem et se'ei rati b'ra'ah se'ola. You will have brought down my holiness and evil to the grave. These words never appear to Yosef beforehand. And then Yehuda says, you know what? So I'll tell you what. Instead of taking that boy, Binyamin, do me a favor, take me instead. Return him to my father, because my father's feelings are more important than my own. Binyamin's well-being is more important than my own. In this little statement, in this short little soliloquy of Yehuda, Yehuda has redeemed the two great evils that Yosef feels against his brother and against his family. And all of the feelings and all of the hatred and all of the anger has been brought up and resurfaces in Yosef. On the one hand, you know, until now he could conceal his anger. He hated his father and he hated his brothers. And whatever was going to happen to Yosef was going to happen to Binyamin. And Yosef saw his role as protecting his brother. I'm going to keep this kid here. No, they're not going to be. He's not going to be a slave. I'll take care of him. When those brothers leave, I'll tell him the truth. But now, all of a sudden, Yosef is in an upheaval. First of all, you're telling me that I thought my father was in on this all along. I thought that he sent me down here. I thought that he wanted to get rid of me, but didn't have the guts to kill me. And now you're telling me he thought I was killed for these past 20 years.
Is it true that Yaakov thought he was killed?
No.
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 He never believed that.
Never believed it. He said, Ach Tarov Torah. Must be. Ach, but what can I tell you? He's gone. It's interesting. It's interesting the way he says it. The way he says it. He says, right. Va'omar Ach Tarov Torah. I said he must have been torn up because V'lo Ritiv Adhena. I haven't seen him since. Meaning, and that tells Yosef, he always was wanted me. He's always wondering. He's always searching for me. It wasn't that he didn't want me, that he sent me away. He's been yearning for me as much as I secretly been yearning for him. Can you imagine a person like that? Who literally, who buried his feelings before, who named his son after my father is dead to me. That's what he named his son. To all of a sudden learn in a single moment that the father who you love and who you thought rejected you and hated you, has loved you and wanted you all this time. And the brothers who you blamed and you hated all these years have done tshuva. And the brother that sold you is now willing to give up his life for the sake of his brother who's not his mother's son. So says the Torah on 252. Parak Mem Hei, chapter 45. V'lo yachol Yosef lehisapek l'chol ani tzavim alav. Yosef couldn't restrain himself. Why couldn't he restrain himself? You try restraining 20 years of pain. I mean, the deepest pain. The deepest anguish. It was all he could do to just cry out. And that's what he means when he says, Ani Yosef ha'od avicha. He knows that he's alive. But he's saying, he's my father. He wanted me all those years. He yearned for me all those years. He's still my father. He said he wanted Yosef. He didn't send me up the river. So I ask you, Mrs. Hirsch, Yosef doesn't call home. Would you have? No, you wouldn't. You know why you wouldn't? Because did Yishmael ever call Abraham? What? Did Yishmael ever call Abraham? No. When does Yishmael return? When he's dead. Why? Because when your father sends you away, it's bad enough to be rejected once. Can you imagine the idea of being rejected a second time? So who would set themselves up for that kind of rejection? No one would. Okay, for a job, you know, you apply for one job, you didn't get the job, next one. 126th job you didn't get, go for the next one. Because they don't really know, you're going to have your break, you're going to succeed. When your very own father rejects you, you don't come running back. You can't. And he didn't. And he doesn't. Until he realizes it was a mistake. It was not him, it was the brothers. Now, the greatness of Yosef is his ability to forgive the brothers. That's an unfathomable thing. It's an unbelievable thing. To be able to see Yad Hashem, to say, I don't blame you. That Rebbe Baruch Hu set me down here for a reason. I was supposed to be here. I suffered for a reason. And I'm here to do my job. And you shouldn't hold it against one another either. That's unbelievable. That's superhuman. Literally superhuman. And then to go out of your way. And so superhuman that the brothers are always looking the other way. They're looking behind them. How do I know? Anybody know how I know? How do I know that the brothers are always looking behind, you know, watching their backs?
Because we were worried that
it's in this week's parsha. Okay, we finally get to Vayechi.
Well, we were in
mission
2 weeks
ago. What? I wasn't going to do that. I've done it. I think I did that maybe 2-3 years ago. But it's always good to review. But this is a very famous mahalach on the parsha from the Menachem Liebtag. If you remember, he was here. Menachem Liebtag, oh, it's so good. It's so interesting. Very, very fascinating. It's a very well-known theme that he developed. And to be honest with you, it's so compelling. I mean, it seems so obvious why he wouldn't, you know, forget the nevuah, not the, you know, Ramban is looking in the Kabbalah perspective, you know, fulfilling the nevuah and the dreams, he doesn't reveal himself. You know, this is people. This is human nature. You know, you have to look at the history. Right? Abraham had Yitzchak and Yishmael, sent Yishmael away. Yitzchak had Yaakov and Esau, see you later, Esau. So Yaakov has to make a choice. Will it be the sons of Leah or the sons of Rachel? Tell you what, Mr. Son of Rachel, you're a little too arrogant for my blood. You gotta go. If I was that, it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? So what does Yishmael do when he's sent away? What does he do with his wife?
He makes him build a wife for himself.
He built the whole kingdom of Ishmael. What does Esav do when he's sent away? Same thing. What does Yosef do?
The same
exact thing. I'm destined for my own greatness like the other cast offs. Except, they didn't know. It was supposed to be the shift they got. Yeah.
In our own lives, it's like that.
How do you mean?
When we have a gripe with somebody, we build it up to such an extent that we write that person's relationship and everything off totally. And it may not even be that way. I found out the biggest sorrow that you can create is the terror that you create in yourself because you think that person thought or did that.
That's true.
And there's no truth to it.
That's true.
We hurt ourselves tremendously much. This is what we...
Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. You also had ample evidence to look at. You know, it just, if you add all the pieces of the puzzle together, it creates a very, very vivid picture that happened to have been incorrect. Yeah, because you went in this year 2 years ago. It's unbelievably compelling. It really is so, so compelling. You know, because if you look at all the evidence, you know, it's just, it sort of kind of hits you in the face, doesn't it? Yeah. But I agree with you. We do that all the time. It's a very big mussar that we do all the time. That we, you know, people do things that they would normally do. You know, especially in relationships, in spousal relationships. You know, one spouse is upset and the other one, you know, I'm tired. Or my wife is tired, and all of a sudden says she's short. You know, she's tired. She's tired. So you know, instead of answering me the way, oh yeah, how are you? Da, da, da. So, you know, she's tired. So what do I all of a sudden assume? Knowing that I, of course, forgot to take out the garbage, I figure, well, just because I didn't take out the garbage doesn't mean you have to snap at me, right? And so I'm short with her, and she figures, you know, because you know, I don't know, whatever. Dinner was burnt last night, you know. So you won't have to snap at me for not taking out the garbage if I burn dinner. And things build up that way. He's absolutely right.
I have a little saying for that. I took it out of something else. Anger and resentment is like swallowing poison and waiting for the other guy to die.
Mm-hmm.
Anger and resentment is like taking poison and waiting for the other guy to die.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah. Wow.
I've heard, you know, even recently, you know, you hear about people that they're stuck in unbelievably painful situations and they make it worse for themselves because it's just so hard to pull yourself out. It's almost like, you know, they say that when the person touches an electricity and if it's a strong enough current, you can't let go. Why not? Just let go. I'm not really sure why that is.
Because what are your nerves and muscles? They're electric impulses and you can't override it. It's like what makes you clasp your hand? It's an electronic impulse. So if there's another like if electricity is stronger, it's overriding your own power. You can't let go.
Right.
And if you touch that person,
then you're stuck.
Then you're stuck. So the only way to let go is to use a broom handle or to get something else to kick that thing away. In other words,
it's such a good analogy for people in painful relationships. You see it all the time that someone is in such a painful relationship, they'd rather just sit there and slug it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see it sometimes in divorce cases. They'd rather stay in that relationship just to inflict pain on the other person
mm-hmm.
than break away. They can't break away, and it almost takes. And you see it also when their friends get involved, you know, because all of a sudden, you know, it's not just me and my spouse. We have a circle of friends, and they have circles of friends. The worst thing you can do as a friend is to get involved. Absolutely. I mean, I'm sure all of you have had this experience with, you know, one time or another. And you have to do is push them away, almost like you said, like take a broom and sort of push them away from one another from a distance. And then they become the same people that they were. But when they're in that situation, it's just so black. It's a horrible thing to see. You know, and the big problem is that when you're in it, you can't pull yourself away. You just can't do it. Good example, Mrs. Orberg. You're absolutely correct. You know, but...
old age teachers, you
said. Or when you meet a lot of different people in different situations. Yeah, unfortunately. Okay.
Where do you come up with your own?
Yeah, Mrs. Orberg, what is it? What's your secret? What's this chus? What's this chus? You don't know? Okay.
That's why I give
you a good deal. Okay. How do I know that Yosef's brothers were looking over their shoulder? What happens after Yaakov dies? Turn to page 286 for a minute.
They're afraid that he's going to take it out.
286. All right. 286.
Because you find the place.
286. Vayiru achei Yosef, the brothers of Yosef saw. Kinesh Avihem. Their father had died. Vayomru, and they said, Lu Yistamenu Yosef. 286 of the Tesla. Lu Yistamenu Yosef. Perhaps Yosef will hate us. Meaning, Lu is like Halavai. I mean, it's almost like a fulfilled prophecy. Of course he hates us. How could it be that he doesn't hate us? V'hashev yashiv lanu eis kol hara'a shegmalanu osho. And he's going to give us back what we got from him. Meaning, why didn't he exact it from us until now? Because of Yaakov, out of respect for his father. A very common thing. When the father's alive, it's bad enough. He has enough service in his life. He needs to see one brother kill another brother. No. But now that our father's dead, nothing's going to stand in front of Yosef. He's the second in command of Egypt. All these armies that are escorting us, that escorted us to bury our father and escorting us back, in a second, in an instant, he can turn them on us and wipe us all out. That'll be the end of us. Vayitzavu al Yosef leimor. They commanded Yosef the following. Avicha tziva lifnei moso leimor. Your father commanded us before his death the following. Kosa amrula Yosef. Tell this to Yosef. Ana shana pesha achecha v'chatasam kira'a gmalucha. Please, Yosef, look the other way. Forgive the deeds of your brothers and the sins that they did to you. And they say, v'ata sana v'pesha avdei Elohei avicha. So do us a favor, Yosef. Please forgive us. And what is Yosef's reaction? Vayevk Yosef b'dabram elav. Yosef cried when they said this to him. Why does he cry? There's a lot of crying in this story.
He thinks that he hasn't. They think he hasn't.
Mrs. Rowe, what's
that? They think he hasn't forgiven them.
Oh, so it's one of two things. One of two possibilities.
He wasn't thinking about it.
On the one hand,
but he
might cry because he did forgive them.
And
they didn't trust him. And you know what? You know, Yosef knew at this point, nothing he could say and nothing he could do would ever regenerate that trust. You know, there are times in life, and this is also true, there are times in life where you cannot go back. You know, a husband and a wife have a trust between one another, a deep trust. And if one, God forbid, violates that trust, you can never go back. Once you break that trust, so you might rekindle the relationship and you might go on and you might try to build again, but you'll never achieve the level of trust that you had before. It's impossible. You're always wondering in the back of your mind, did it once, are they doing it again? Am I wrong about that one? Yeah. Or, on the other hand, What were you saying, Mrs. Rober? What was the other possibility while Yosef was crying? He was thinking about it. He forgave them. He did forgive them. Meaning there's a heart and there's a mind. Intellectually, I forgive you. Why do I forgive you? Because intellectually, I know that God has a plan. And I know that I have a purpose. But my heart still feels pain. I wasn't going to do it. But I was thinking about it. You know, out of respect for my father, out of respect for everything he lived for, I wouldn't do it. But it still is painful. It's painful that you don't trust me, and it's painful that there's a reason you don't trust me. So which one is it? Which one? A or B? Are those mutually exclusive? I don't know. That's a hard one. It's a really, really tough one. But, you know, this is the stage for the Jewish people. Some unified country. Right, this is how we start off. We begin in this incredible, you know, competition, enmity, mistrust, hatred for one another. So how do you solve that? How do you solve enmity, mistrust, hatred, and disunity?
You find somebody else to pick on.
You're close. How do you gain unity in a situation of enmity and distrust, of hatred? But if I said it, you could never go back. Which is? That's very good. Correct. Absolutely correct.
For your own survival. No, I'm thinking about what's going on in Israel today. We have so many pieces of a state that the only time that we come unified is when we have the threat of annihilation from the Arab warmongers.
I got to tell you.
The only time we come together.
You got me started. So I see that I get the headlines on my homepage on the internet. So I have the world news from the AP and the world news from Reuters. And you know, these are two big major world news services. There's the AP, the Associated Press, and there's Reuters. Reuters is anti-Semitic by far. Because you see, you know, if there's a bombing, Chas v'Shalom, in Eretz Yisrael, so AP will run a story, suicide bomber kills 12 in Jerusalem. Okay? The Reuters, I kid you not, will run a story saying, Palestinian bomber killed in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. Something like
same
that.
Thing.
So today on Reuters, they ran a headline. Arafat says Sharon is not serious about peace. I laughed out loud. Arafat says Sharon not serious about peace. Is there anything untrue about that headline?
Yeah.
No. But the whole thing is dripping with sheker.
Mm-hmm.
Mashmos is Arafat, the serious peacemaker, complaining that his counterpart, Ariel Sharon, isn't serious. It's unbelievable. It's really an unbelievable thing. How the media can take MS and make total sheker out of it. Yeah, yeah. They named Reuters as their goat of the year for 2003. I'm glad they did it, because so many times I've seen, really, you can see the AP headlines and it's from Media Watch or something. You know what that is, Media Watch? You know who runs it? I think it's the people who put out Relentless. What is it? It's like Aisha Torah, I think,
right,
or something.
Right. Aisha Torah does Relentless.
Yeah.
Relentless.
That's them. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing that they do that. It's mm-hmm. a nice thing. It's, you know, it's an unbelievable thing. What unites people that I can't get along?
Hatred for somebody else.
Well, close.
Your own survival.
Suffering.
Your own survival.
To a suffering. One of the things I noticed when I was on the East Coast is it's very popular now in American shuls to say, we say Tehillim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we say Tehillim in between davening, between Mincha and Maariv, after Shacharis. And it's a good thing, but it's not a good thing. Because there is such a thing as, it's like antibiotics. An antibiotic is good.
Yeah. But if you use them, you become immune to it.
Exactly. In fact, it's a very good example.
If you do Tehillim without
hey, thank you for saying that. That's an if you overuse them, you become immune to them. You know, if you say Nimamakin Krasich Hashem, what is Nimamakin Krasich? I call you out from the depths of despair. Don't get me wrong, but you just can't be in the depths of despair every morning and evening.
I hope not.
What? And if you are, you know, we sort of you adjust to it. And you have a new depths of despair. You know, if you're in depths of despair every morning and evening, you don't last that long. So if we say, you know, if we say Mima Makim Krasich Hashem every morning and afternoon, every day, it's like antibiotics. Pretty soon you become immune to it. And the treatment becomes ineffective.
Mm.
So there's a danger of that. So what I started doing, we'll see how long this lasts, is at least in the afternoon. So we don't say these same Tehillim. What they did when the Intifada II first started, they put out a call to say special three Tehillim. I think it was Pei Gimel or Pei Beis and Kuf Lamed and Kuf Mem Beis. So a while ago we stopped doing that for this reason, because I felt saying the same things over and over again, you learn the words and then it doesn't mean anything to you at all.
Say different ones every time.
Yeah, so we start doing that. That's what we do. The only problem with that again is if you don't know what you're saying, I'm sorry, it doesn't mean anything. Good.
Get the linear to the
good, absolutely. Absolutely. All these things are important. But if you go to the Hillel group, just to cover the Hillel, I really don't think it means anything. I just don't. I'm sorry. I think you have to know what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might be good to say some words, some Jewish words. It's better than, you know, watching The View or whatever else is on. But it's hard to say that it really means anything. If you're supposed to be calling out to God, it's supposed to be Tehillim. The beauty of Tehillim is that David HaMelech, or whoever wrote the other ones, he had the ability to capture an emotion, a way of reaching out to God in ways that we don't. I'm no poet. I don't know how to say what I want to say. So David HaMelech didn't know how to say what I wanted to say. So he wrote one that when you're in trouble, when Lo Aleinu, a close person to you, is in the hospital and you don't know how to call it to God, so you have Shir Amalos V'Ma'am Makin Kras Yichasha. When the Jewish people are really in trouble. But to say the same thing every day, it's hard. Well, it's great unity. Why can't you unify and know what you're saying? Oh yeah, when they give out Tehillim on the film groups, there's an English one too? Everybody gets English?
Usually not. I think it's
not.
They can't
correct.
Even find it because they don't know the gematria of the letter.
I don't know. So that doesn't...
Well,
I mean, so I'll help them.
Well, that's why everyone's going like this, because they don't know
the gematria. Uh-huh. One second.
If they're saying it, at least they're trying.
What? But I'm saying, don't go to a healing group to say it all, to cover it all when you don't know what you're saying. Say less and cry out to God. Say one. I promise you, it's better to say one or half of one or two psukim. And know what you're saying and have a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu than to say, oh, well, in our Tehillim group, we covered all 150 today.
I say it, I always look over the
why?
Image. It's better than saying
that. Yeah, I think it's better than watching The View.
It's better than saying nothing.
What?
Sometimes people do it by rote. You know, they have those mantras that people repeat the word, whatever they are, nonsense syllables, and it gives themselves a sense of...
So all of a sudden, now we've reduced Tehillim to a yoga mantra. I don't accept that.
No, maybe it
what?
Works for some people.
Of course, the Chazal do say the same about davening. Absolutely.
Right. So some people, of course, just stop.
No, what does it mean?
It means reevaluate them more.
It means to think about davening. That's a danger that we all fall prey to.
But we don't stop.
What?
We don't stop.
Did I once say stop?
Well, you said better not to say the whole thing.
I said better to say enough that you know what you're saying. That's all I said. That's the song. You shouldn't stop. Everybody should go to the healing groups. It should be a healing group where today we're going to say one capital. But somehow people need to know that they finished the whole thing. Like, you know, if you don't finish the whole thing, the same thing happens to me also. You know, we're all fall prey to we want to finish, we want to cover ground. You know, and yeah, when you learn, you want to cover ground. You got to keep moving. You know, it's a Yetzer Hara in a sense.
I remember getting back to the very ill,
mm-hmm.
And this person asked me to get the food together, and we have to say the whole thing. So there must be some value. I just did.
Who told you to say the whole thing?
I was asked by somebody in New York who sent me a whole bunch of them, and it was very hard to get people to.
Well, there's certainly a sense of accomplishment. There's a sense of right doing. There is, but it's also even take an English subject. You get this big thick textbook in the beginning of the semester, like 50 chapters. You can't do the whole thing. There's no way. So you do selected chapters. You know, in college when you only have 13. You know, 13 weeks to cover all the territory. Of course, at the first day, you're very eager. You're going to do the whole thing. But in the end, if you do 5 chapters, you've accomplished something. Yes, you haven't gotten the whole thing through, but you have at least the knowledge.
I said there must have been something about you going about finishing it.
I'm not disagreeing, but because it's a personal choice. It's a personal choice whether or not to
finish. No, I don't agree with the comparison to the secular. To a secular.
Well, I'm just trying to. Yeah, there's a merit. There's a cheddar.
There definitely is a value in reciting the words.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. It pales in comparison to actually davening, especially knowing what you're saying. I'm just trying to find the reason. I brought this up for a reason. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So I wouldn't say dafyomi is a bad thing, but would it be better if those people took that same hour and learned, you know, in depth and really knew it? Yes, it would. Now, would they do it? No, they wouldn't. Right. I agree with you.
But what I
really disagree with is when people in yeshiva are doing dafyomi. You know, that's not for them. I think dafyomi is a great thing. Now, at least you send in kavra. You know, especially Long Island Railway. Okay. Yesterday we said it's a chilim. Let me see. Here. What's that? Go ahead. I can take it.
Well, we have a group that says, you know, each hour portion to say every day.
Mm-hmm.
We have the names, we have the list of names, and they keep up with the names, you know, calling if there's changes and every bunch of people get a name.
Every day you say how many?
I have a couple pages to say.
Three.
How many? Three chapters at the Hill?
No, mine is working actually, but that's a long one, so they gave me that one.
Okay, but if you say the same thing every day, but you know what you're saying.
Four short ones. But every person has a portion to say. And we cover the whole Tehillim.
Okay.
The group covers the whole Tehillim every day.
Fine.
And we have these names to say. But I always look to see the meaning of it.
Good. I say you agree with me.
Personally, you're not saying all 150
years. No.
So that you have, so that's the point. So you have the...
So I have to find the words that I know, so I know them. I know the whole thing.
So we gave out...
I don't remember where I saw it already. I spoke about it a few days ago. About, you know, the idea of I even spoke about it. So what I started doing is speaking about the Tehillim. Instead of saying it in between the Chanmarv, I speak about at least something in the Tehillim. And then we recite the Tehillim. And for me, it's better at least, because then at least I know what I'm saying. I know something about what I'm saying. At least an idea, a thought about what I'm saying. Okay. I don't remember what I said. Okay. But the idea is, so what brings brothers together? What brings families together?
Why is Yom saying
suffering.
Why?
Suffering. So Kodesh Baruch Hu knows. Right. All the divisions fall away. All the competition between Yosef and Yehuda and Reuven and Shimon, the whole thing means nothing. When does it mean nothing? When they're all building pyramids together in Egypt, it doesn't mean anything. Right? Oh, their petty jealousies and their hatred for one another. There's a power asher lo yada es Yosef. Didn't know Yosef, didn't know Reuven or Shimon or Levi or Yehuda either. They're all Jews. That's a great common denominator. And it's classical Jewish history. I'm more important than you. I have got the answer, as opposed to you have the answer. I'm going to save the Jewish people. You're not going to save the Jewish people. So there's only one thing that brings us together. Right? That searing heat, it burns all of us the same way, uniformly.
Is it a shame?
No, I mean, there's another option. What's the other option? Yeah. Get along with everybody. Right, so you have to ask yourself, who do you have hatred in your heart for?
In every age there have been a people to hate the Jews in every age.
No, I'm asking you, which Jews do you have hatred in your heart for? Don't answer the question. It's interesting, I was listening to, it was very fascinating, there's this biography by Walter Isaacson of Ben Franklin. It's a bestseller now. Biography of Ben Franklin, the new biography. Franklin was a fascinating man. And he created this civil group of tradesmen. He didn't get into the big trade group in Philadelphia. He wasn't cautious enough. So he made his own little, you know, lodge club. And he used to say, one of the things he used to have, they used to have to pledge before they began their meetings. Yeah, they would sit and schmooze and drink. But before the, yeah, he has a Kiddush club. That's right. But before the meetings, one of the things they would say is, I pledge that I have no hatred in my heart for any other religion, any other man, any other race, and any other creed. This is Franklin in America 300 years ago, before the war of the United States. And that's how you build. That's how you create. So each of us has to ask ourselves, in my group, in the group that which I belong, who do I hate? Who do we hate? Who do we look down upon? Don't be so sure. None of us are innocent. You know what I'm saying? Who do we act hatefully towards?
Those who don't accept you.
Why? Why should we?
I don't know.
Right.
Do you hate the people who hate you?
No.
No?
Why should you?
The people who hate you?
I wouldn't say no. You're talking about people that are trying to hurt you, that are trying to kill you?
People who show you by their actions and their speech that they're anti-Semites and they hate all Jews.
Yeah, you can hate those people. You know, but you can hate to defend yourself. But I'm not talking about that. I'm saying, but those aren't Jewish people.
No, we don't want Jewish people.
Right.
You don't follow what you're doing to look down or make you feel...
Do you hate them or you pity them? Very big difference. Very big difference.
But I know that they're...
Well, pity is a very noble emotion.
Yes, it is.
You're very noble.
Pity is an emotion of the self-confident and the self-assured, as opposed to the threatened.
But they're a little fearful. I know I'm like, this is good.
What?
To have pity on somebody is very...
I have to tell you, I often, I found myself crying. I'm going to stop patient.